Mary Nightingale. Welcome to the Piper podcast, How I Grew My Brand, where we talk to successful founders about how they built their business, how the idea was born, how they nurtured it with all the growing pains and challenges along the way, and eventually, in some cases, reached the point where they decided to let their baby go. We get the inside story of that journey to becoming a brand legend. With me today is James Mashrecki, co-founder of Skin & Me, the online skincare brand that aims to provide personalised dermatological solutions at a fraction of the cost of Harley Street's finest. Launched in 2019, it has been a huge success. Welcome, James. How nice to meet you.
Good to be here.
It has been a great success, but you have just emerged from the most stressful weekend it is almost possible to imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think the human body is supposed to go through that rollercoaster of emotions that quickly. So both of my companies bank with Silicon Valley Bank that went bust on Friday. And so very quickly, my whole world kind of got just shaken up to the extent that on Saturday morning, we'd had a statement from the Bank of England saying that SVB was going to go into insolvency, which meant that myself and, frankly, the whole tech community, but basically both of my businesses, weren't going to have access to their money. And my latest business in particular would have had access to only a few percent of its money, because that's all we had outside of the business and its pre-revenue. So Saturday morning, I was emergency planning with my team. I was giving notice to my landlord to move out of my flat to cut down my expenses because I thought I was going to have to put my own money back into the business. And so it's a real example of how you might think you've got everything under control, but you can really have the rug pulled out from under you when you least expect it. But huge, hugely grateful to CODEC, which is the coalition set up to support the digital economy in Parliament, for pulling off the deal of the century, basically, and basically saving UK tech. We would have gone back a decade overnight if that hadn't happened. So Monday morning, basically no one can upset me this week. Whatever goes wrong, it's impossible to, because I'm on such a natural high from that.
The relief must be extraordinary.
Yeah, I've never felt relief like it. I mean, genuinely, my whole livelihood was just out of my hands. Imagine trying to log into your online bank one day at Santander, and you're told your money is gone and you might get 2% of it back, maybe in the future. And that's the level that the FCSC insurance goes up to. So it kind of highlights the fragility of the system. And also, when you're a founder, you've got a lot of risk to manage. And that's basically your job, is fighting fires. And at least for myself, and I'm sure a lot of other tech founders, expecting a major bank to go under is just not high up on the list of things that you want to risk mitigate against. So that's why a lot of us got found with our eggs in one basket and it came back to bite us. But we live to fight another day.
Mm. Has it changed your attitude to risk now? Because I know, you used to be a professional poker player. You are someone who has always said that you're very comfortable with risk. You can, it doesn't stress you out. And yet here you are, you actually had a fun, almost existential crisis.
Definitely what myself, and I hope every founder in the UK and VC does now, is diversifies their capital. It's kind of finance 101. I guess comfort with risk is different to comfort with terror. And risk kind of playing out in the wrong way and the outcome of that is not something that I'm particularly used to that extreme anyway. Life as a founder is, you might come into work in the morning and by the middle of the day, everything's gone wrong, products are not working, customers are unhappy, team members upset, and maybe by later in the day, you've turned it all around and it feels like a great day. So you're used to that roller coaster. This was just a complete and utter extreme. And as much as I know that we and I can get through stuff like that and we demonstrated that we've all got resilience, I'd like to not have one of those for a very long time.
Yeah. And throughout that, you still had to be the leader and you're the guy who has to say, OK, people, this is what we're going to do. You didn't have the option of just curling into a fetal position and weeping all weekend.
Part of me just wanted to say, why do I put myself through this? This has just been a journey for 15 years almost as being an entrepreneur. And I'm about to watch it all essentially evaporate in front of my eyes. But you have to be strong as a leader. And crises like that are really testing times. I found it very testing personally, because you've got to demonstrate to yourself and then that will rub off on your team that you are going to get through it. Even if all of the money is taken away, the diddly squat that we've got left in the other bank account, we will make it work. And let's go into emergency planning mode. And it's pretty depressing to have to map out those scenarios, because, you know, you've also got team members that you're doing it with that need income from the business. And if there's not enough money in the business to go around, people can't get paid. And so it's quite a terrifying reality. But yeah, I had to be that person. And also my team, I guess I've been blown away by the strength of the team. And actually, they say that, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I think the strength and resilience that the team demonstrated and what we went through together, it's kind of brought us even closer, ironically. Not that I want to go through that again. I'd like us to just stay close now. But yeah, what a weekend.
What a weekend. Whew. Okay. So tell me then all about Skin and Me. What is it?
Sure. Skin and Me is an online dermatology service. What we do is we do an online consultation with people in the UK, and they answer questions about our skin and they upload photographs. And then we have a team of pharmacist prescribers, our dermatology team, that review your consultation. And if you're suitable for treatment, they will prescribe a personalized treatment for you, a treatment plan. And we send it to you in the post in our packaging called the Daily Doser. You twist it and click it and you get your daily dose and you apply it to your face. And what we do is we treat all sorts of skin conditions, from acne to rosacea to pigmentation. And a lot of our customers want to reduce the signs of aging, and so that's a really big skin goal for us to treat. And every month your treatment arrives in the post and it will evolve over time. And what's really different about Skin and Me compared to if you wanted to treat your skin by going to a, say, a GP, is that if you went to a GP, I mean, my dad was a GP, he had 2 weeks training in dermatology. They can't be experts at everything, so they have limited knowledge, frankly. Aside from not being a complete specialist, you're going to be prescribed a licensed medication, which is, frankly, one of the limited options that the NHS prescribing chart has for the GPs. So you're not getting something personalized. You're getting a one-size-fits-all treatment. And what is far superior is getting something made for you and something that evolves over time as your skin improves and as your skin goals change. So it's a solution that you can't get anywhere else. And it's gone down a hit in the UK over the last few years.
Mm. And where did the idea come from?
So myself and my co-founder, Phil, were looking for our next business idea. We're both in between businesses. And I always find this stage of being an entrepreneur the most challenging one, because I'm so eager to get going and just do my next thing. But if you're going to spend 5 to 10 years of your life on something, you want to make sure it's right. And you want to make sure it's got big potential. And so we were testing out lots of different business ideas, and we got exposed to the beauty industry by a friend of ours that was an investor in the category. And I found it fascinating. I mean, first of all, the number's fascinating. The size of it, £140 billion market. Women, frankly, spend a disproportionate amount of their disposable income, not a very sensible amount, on beauty. There's this concept called the lipstick effect, which really reflects the resilience of the category, which means that even in times of hardship, in times of war, women will still wear lipstick because it gives them self-confidence. And that's the one thing they will not compromise on. And it's also a very high gross margin, low return rate category. So that made it quite enticing. But there's a lot of sameness, I would say, in the beauty industry. There's a lot of brands just launching products that are very similar to all the other brands on the shelf, except they're in different packaging. And the industry thrives on novelty and newness. I wasn't particularly excited about just setting up yet another beauty brand, but we had a bit of a thesis around this theme of personalization, which was pretty hot 5 years ago. But it didn't really mean much. It just meant that every beauty website you went on would ask you a few questions and then send you to one of the products that you were going to click on anyway on their website. But nevertheless, we thought we'd try this concept out, whereby we would do an online consultation with people and we'd have a skincare expert send them a box of skincare products. But we wanted to do it a little bit differently, because the beauty industry isn't very good at converting people from sample. You know, when you get the sample sachets at Space NK or Selfridges, they don't know who that is. They don't have your email address and they just spend a load of money on them. They distribute them and they hope for the best. We had this theory that we could do it a bit better. So people would come to our website called Mr. and Mrs. Oliver.com, which is still the limited company name for Skin and Me, ironically. And they would do the consultation. And then we had these skincare experts that we'd recruited that would prepare a report. We'd print it out on beautiful paper. We'd put their picture in the corner and we'd put it in their box with the recommended skincare products. But what we did alongside them was we put these sample pots in the box because we wanted to de-risk the purchase to the customer. So we said, we're going to pre-authorize your credit card, but not charge you. And in the box, you're going to have little sample pots and full-size products. Use the sample pots for a week. If you like them, keep the products and we'll charge you. If you don't like them, send the whole thing back with a prepaid label and we won't charge you a penny. What that meant was we needed to get sample pots in every box and we had a lot of boxes to ship out and we were just doing it ourselves in this dingy office in Leicester Square above the Arts Theatre.
And this is 2019, isn't it?
This is 2018. This is early 2018. Okay. Yeah, it's been a long journey. And skincare products cost a lot of money. So we didn't want to buy a full-size Charlotte Tilbury cream and squeeze it out into a sample pot. So I would run to Selfridges, Debenhams, House of Fraser at the time, you name it. And I would, they all got to know me in the end. I actually got barred from Debenhams as a result. And I would take, it's so funny looking back, I used to take my own sample pots because we wanted everyone to see, to have like branded sample pots. And I just remember this guy asked me, why have you brought your own? And I think I said I had some sort of OCD or hygiene problem such that I couldn't take.
So hang on a minute. You were filling your own sample pots from their sample.
Mm-hmm.
Cheeky. Yeah.
Well,
no wonder you were banned.
Yeah, exactly. But you've kind of got to hustle as a founder. So yeah, I would go in with all these sample pots, with the orders on my phone. Okay, I need to get this Charlotte Tilbury, that Ren skincare night cream.
Okay, so this was not obviously your own branded stuff. People
exactly.
were just ordering different brands through you.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And so we would then send you as the customer this box with your letter, your sample pots, and your full size products. And I had the genius idea of thinking, well, like in a subscription business, all that matters is retention. If people, you know, leave after a couple of months, you might not have even made enough money back to make the business model work. And I had this genius idea of putting free gifts, which cost us even more money, into the first box. And so I would buy chocolates and all sorts and throw them in the box. And the amount of people that would just eat the chocolates, keep the sample pots and send the whole thing back to us.
And that's going to be even worse because they'd had all that chocolate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you see snake oil.
Don't use Mr. and Mrs. Oliver is the lesson here. But what that did teach us is that that business model is completely flawed because you don't have the control. It's not your brand. And frankly, we could recommend a load of brands to you and then you go off to Amazon and get them cheaper. So we weren't going to win at that game. But what it did teach us is that people really care about having a credible human being recommend a skincare regime for them. People are fed up of having to find the answers themselves in the skincare industry. You know, and you should try this. Go into Space NK, go to Selfridges, go to John Lewis, and go to the beauty counters. You will get three different bits of advice from people there because they're not dermatologists. So it's a lot of, well, I heard this, I heard that. So people really value having a single source of truth. And then if they can put their trust in that single source of truth, they can take that weight off their shoulders. So that was a really big learning that we took forward. The idea of setting up a standard beauty brand, we didn't feel like we would have had a competitive advantage because we just didn't have the industry background. But we started thinking, well, what is the way to really keep people on a treatment plan, on a skincare plan for the long term? Well, there's one thing that matters, and that's results. If the thing doesn't work, they ain't going to stick around for long. They will for a few months, but the novelty soon wears off and the subscription business wouldn't work. So we started thinking, what is the best way to give people a product that will deliver amazing results? And the answer is with prescription grade ingredients, because you can't use prescription grade ingredients on the high street, obviously, because it's not legal. You need to be prescribed. But the results from prescription grade treatments like tretinoin are proven in decades of clinical trials, unlike anything else you'd find on the high street. There's just a big difference. It's a step change in performance. And so we thought, well, if we can figure out a way to put medical grade ingredients in a personalized treatment that is made by us and a layer on top of that, a consultation with a skincare expert, we thought that would be a service like no other, frankly. And that was really what started the genesis of Skin and Me. And from there, it was a case of, okay, well, what do we need? Well, we need a dermatologist. And I'm used to hiring people through LinkedIn. dermatologists, some of them might be on LinkedIn, but that's not really the way to hire them. So we wrote 250 handwritten letters to a third of the UK's 700 dermatologists and eventually got an amazing one, a consultant dermatologist on board. And that was the start of really the snowball effect of us having a bit more credibility in the business such that we could then go out and raise money and start building the plan.
So that's how it came into being. Where are you now? How many customers? How many people do you employ? Where is it based? What do you do?
So we now have almost 100 staff at Skin & Me and growing. We've got big growth plans this year. We've sent millions of boxes out over the last couple of years to hundreds of thousands of customers. We really feel like we're just scratching the surface. I'm now chairman in the business. I was CEO throughout the start of the company and through the fundraising rounds and setting up the business and taking it to launch. I'm very much the what we call in the startup community the zero to one person. I love coming up with the ideas, forming the team, the plan, and so on. I've also just personally got a lot of ambition, and so I can't run multiple companies at one time. So I'm now chairman in Skin & Me, and I've started a new business called Life Supplies.
Which is a sustainable bathroom kind
exactly.
of products thing.
Yeah? Exactly. Okay. I've got a gift for you in my bag, actually.
Yeah, yeah. You see, you know how to work it, don't you?
Yeah, it's sustainable and refillable personal care products like deodorants, loo roll, hand wash, shampoo.
Okay. You're a serial entrepreneur, aren't you? Let's go right back to the beginning. Early life, family. Tell me about James.
So I grew up in the Northeast. I don't know if you can tell from my accent. I'm from Durham. And I always knew that I wanted to, I just used to say, even in my early teens, I want to be a businessman. And I'm not sure there was a particular trigger. I just think for some people, it's in your blood, just taking a slightly alternative path. And I always felt like, I mean, my family are very traditional. So my dad is a doctor, my brother is a doctor. So, you know, I think they very early on lost any hope of me following that path. But I was in school doing anything from going to this O'Neill board shorts closing down factory sale and spending every penny of my pocket money to buy up stock to then sell it in school, to selling music on floppy disk and then CD when that became more prevalent. But I was just always trying to find ways to make money and get by. And I just loved it. It's addictive. It's a game. It's a game. I still love getting a deal, buying anything, even something for a fiver. I'll try and get a deal on it. And I'm just kind of addicted to figuring things out and making money or saving money like that. I did go to university. I studied marketing management. If I'm honest, I didn't really learn anything. If I could turn back the clock, I wouldn't have gone to uni. I didn't have a bad experience. I had a lot of fun, but they were three critical years that I could have started a company in. I guess my first step in my career was not starting a business. It was after university, I was a professional poker player. Believe it or not, you can play that for a living. But all you have to do is just not have a job and play poker every day, and then you're a professional. So that was actually a really good setup for being an entrepreneur, because there are a lot of qualities that you need to be a successful poker player that you also need to be a successful founder. And frankly, the obvious one is just comfort with risk. In order to play poker well, you need to have a complete disregard for the money that's on the table. Whether it's £100 or £10,000, you can't treat it like, oh, I could go and buy a car or buy a nice watch with this money. And so almost disassociating the value of the money, and then that meaning that you can put it on the line, as in you could be running a bluff and be comfortable with that, is a good way to also think about entrepreneurship. Because if you think about it rationally and objectively, I mean, it's very risky setting up a company. Most startups fail. Everything can go wrong. There's no school to go to learn. I mean, there are courses probably now to be an entrepreneur. Nothing really gets you ready for it other than starting a company and starting to hire people and realizing, well, how do you hire someone? And you'll be Googling how to do that. And you're just faced with impossible, challenging and high risk decisions every day. I think poker got me a bit more comfortable with that.
And I'm also thinking that, you know, the old poker face, you know, you must be a very good negotiator. It must be a great advantage to be that good.
It does help. It does help. And my monthly poker game that I host at my flat, which actually on Saturday morning I thought wasn't going to be my flat for a while, is a good negotiation testing ground.
You said that poker gives you the ability to dissociate the value of money. Is money a motivator for you, or is your motivation more than money?
I mean, it's a lot more than money. There's a reason why both of my companies are mission-driven companies. I think that there's this classic video of Steve Jobs, who I really admired, where he talks about, you know, and it sounds obvious even just to say it, but unless you're passionate, unless you care about what you do, you'll probably fail because it's so hard. And you will feel like the world is against you for years. And you'll sometimes think, well, maybe I should just have a job. I've never had a job, so I rarely really default to that thinking. But I think if you had one before, you'd have that thought a lot of times. And so you need to be passionate and care about what you're doing. And frankly, I think if all you care about is just making a boatload of money, it's not enough of a motivator. It just doesn't have that emotional, intrinsic hook for you. So for me, yeah, I mean, I definitely want to be really comfortable. Like, who doesn't? Why wouldn't you? And, you know, one day when I have a family, I don't want to have to worry about money. But I think that there's a baseline where you get to, and I think it's a lot lower than what I maybe thought when I was younger. And above that, I don't think your happiness increases anymore with additional money. And so, you know, I've got a nice flat and I've got all that I need, and I can enjoy myself and go on the odd holiday, although I can't remember when I had my last one. You know, I don't need private jets and like a big boat in order to feel like what I've been doing is worth it. For me, on my way here, actually, I get messages from people quite regularly telling me how Skinemy has changed their life. And this girl messaged me this morning saying that she's so deeply grateful for the impact that Skinemy has had on her sister and her sister's self-confidence. And skin conditions like acne can be so deeply debilitating. They can lead to suicide. They can lead to real mental health issues. And the NHS is frankly not equipped to serve them because there's only 650 dermatologists in the whole of the UK. 6+ month waits in most of the UK, unless you're referred for something severe. So getting messages like that are just like deeply fulfilling. And seeing the reviews on our Trustpilot of people telling us how happy they are what make it worthwhile.
You're listening to the Piper podcast, How I Grew My Brand. Today I'm with James Mishrecki, founder of the online skincare brand Skin and Me. Now, Piper talks about building brand legends, The importance of brands staying resolutely true to their purpose. What is Skin and Me's purpose?
We started Skin and Me because, so £140 billion market, 50% of people are unhappy with their current skincare regime. Talk to a woman and ask her, what skin cream are you using now? And she'll say, oh my word, I found the best one. It's the Magic Cream by Charlotte Tilbury. And then talk to her 2 months later, what are you using? Oh, this other brand. I thought you found the best one. Yeah, but they're just always searching for more.
Well, isn't it because the whole thing is a fantasy? I mean, they're selling a dream. I read a stat once that skincare, you spend more as a consumer on the packaging than you do on the contents of it, yeah, and the advertising. And when I joked earlier about it being snake oil, I mean, it's just cream, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess I used to look at it like that. But at the end of the day, these companies aren't doing anything bad if they genuinely are selling confidence. It's just that what is inside. So yes, the packaging definitely costs a lot more than the stuff that's inside the packaging. And frankly, a lot of the brands make their products in the same factories as each other. And it is all marketing. And the marketing works. But they are really giving you, in a lot of cases, confidence. It's just that you're always searching for more. And a lot of the times you'll ask a woman, like, how happy are you with the results? And, you know, they feel like they've not really changed how they look for a long time. And they've been spending a boatload of money on these products. So what we wanted to do was basically make prescription skincare accessible for everyone, because there are a lot of people in the UK that are suffering, frankly, that have a skin condition like acne or rosacea or whatever it might be, and they're a bit stuck. You can't go to your GP and get prescribed something and then start messaging the GP a week later. Well, this has happened. How should I use this? Should I use this cream in conjunction with it? You know, you know what it's like. You have a GP, you go see the GP, you've got a short slot. And so, and a slither of the country can afford to go to Harley Street and pay private. And you can get great service if you go private, but it's hundreds of pounds just for a 20-minute consultation, let alone getting the treatment after that. So we just wanted to provide an easy solution. You come to our website, you sign up in a few minutes, and within a day or two, you've got this personalized treatment in your letterbox. And every day on Instagram, people share the unboxing before they've even used it because they're like, I've never seen anything like this. It's got my name written on it. It's made just for me by, based on a prescription. And it blows people away.
Which has to beg the question, okay, the name's written on the packaging. That's lovely. And the packaging is beautiful. But how personalised can it be really? Really? Through just an online survey, which asks you, do you want your skin to be firmer and clearer? Yes. Do you want to reduce signs of aging? Absolutely, yes. I mean, I'm being devil's advocate here. Honestly, how personalised can it be?
So the questions that we ask and the photographs that you have to upload, they're checked by a human being. They legally have to be a trained and registered, licensed individual that is an expert at looking at, and this is the beauty of superficial like skin conditions in dermatology, is that you can judge a lot from the skin based on looking at photographs and asking a series of questions. And so the pharmacist prescribers at Skin and Me then make a decision based on all of that information, and they construct a treatment plan for you. And your treatment plan and my treatment plan would probably be different depending on our skin goal and our photographs and our answers. So, I mean, the answer is it can be very personalized. It literally doesn't exist until you've completed the consultation. We can't make it for you before you've come along. Whereas if you go into Space NK, it's been sat there on a shelf all this time. So we've got complete flexibility because it's made to order.
Okay. Now, as specialist investors in brands, Piper focuses on understanding what makes a particular brand better and different. So what makes Skin & Me better and different?
I've always thought that business is easy if you make something that people want. It's just a lot of startups forget that people need to want what you make. Because if you make something people want, they'll stick around and they'll tell their friends and they'll do the marketing for you. With Skin & Me, you can't get this elsewhere. And so the fact that it's unique by virtue of you not being able to get it elsewhere and it delivering great results means that we tick that box that I said. We've made something that people want and they tell their friends without us even pushing them too hard to do so.
What about your brand identity? What's your brand's tone of voice? How do you talk to your customers?
When we were going through the branding process, and funnily enough, we were actually called Gleam one day when we were...
Gleam?
G-L-E-A-M.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the name of the business. But we ran into a trademark issue, fortunately, in hindsight, and then we picked Skin & Me. But what we wanted to do was really stand out, because as a brand, you have to stand out. So the starting point was the colour, and we're a very yellow brand. And the reason for that is we looked at the category, and at the time, it was only sun creams that were yellow. The rest of the category wasn't really using yellow. So that was what led us to pick the colour. And then also some brands, you know, dermatologist-approved brands or more clinical brands, they feel a bit cold and they're quite serious. And we wanted to be approachable. And so the brand and the tone feels quite warm. It's quite friendly. If you look on our Instagram, we'll post the odd meme even. And we have a bit of fun because we want you to feel like, you know, we're a person, basically, because you are genuinely talking to an individual. You might get to know your prescriber quite well at Skin & Me.
So you have a dedicated prescriber, do you?
The prescriber can change if you come back to do a re-consultation. But... yeah, the prescribing team and the CS team, they just deeply care and they get their fulfillment from delivering great results and treatment plans to customers and knowing that they see, I mean, on average, our customers go from a 3 out of 10 to a 7 out of 10 in terms of their personal grading of their skin improvement in just a matter of the first couple of months.
Okay, and you exist online only at the moment. Would you consider... you know, going into more face-to-face or bricks and mortar retail?
Yeah, it's a good question. We're thinking about this at the moment. The thing with Skin of Me is because of the nature of what it is, it's a personalized medical grade treatment. So because it's personalized, it can't be sat on a shelf. And because it's medical grade, as in truly prescription grade, you can't sell it on a shelf without a prescription. We've since launched some complementary products to our core prescription treatment, which are a cleanser and a moisturizer, and we've got some others in the pipeline. And, you know, 50% of customers have already taken those up. They could sit on a shelf in a shop, and Skin of Me has good brand awareness now. So we're exploring something like that, and we may or may not do it. But the challenge is, for us, the thing that is most unique can't live on that shelf. And so we've just got to work that through. So, yeah, I think it's just the nature of our business is that we're a bit more constrained to going into the physical footprint than most brands, but that's also our greatest strength, because the thing that stops us from doing that is the thing that gives us a moat around the business.
Okay. And what about your customers? Now, staying close to customers is essential, isn't it? It's always been at the heart very much of how Piper grows brands. So who are Skin of Me's customers?
Our customer is predominantly female. You know, there's a variety of customers based on what the skin goal is. So our customers that are targeting skin goals like clearing spots, they're on the younger side, and customers that are targeting goals like improving skin texture or reducing fine lines and wrinkles are a bit more mature. So we speak to a pretty broad female audience.
Is there a tribe? Is there a community? Are they sort of passionate, your customers?
Really, really, really passionate. We have a Facebook group called the Skin and Me Collective, and we've got thousands and thousands of customers in there. And the amazing thing about it is it's self-supporting. I mean, we would do all of the management in there if that's what people wanted, but they actually want to support each other. So it is a tribe. And, you know, I was in that group this morning just taking a look. What is amazing about it, you'll have someone post, they might be a few weeks into their treatment with Skin and Me, and they have a concern or a question, and they'll put photographs, very personal photographs, into the group. Probably a photograph they definitely wouldn't share around or put on social media. And they'll put that in our private Facebook group, and they'll get support from other customers that talk about Skin of Me as though it is their company. It's so fascinating to watch. And they'll say, well, I was on this treatment plan, and this is what happened to me. Maybe you could talk to them and ask that. You should expect the following. Maybe use this cream. And they all chip in and they all support each other. But it's not just giving practical advice. It's also emotional support, because some people are in a really, they could be in depression. They could be really upset and frustrated at the fact that they've just started Skin of Me and their skin is not in a good place, and they just need someone to reassure them that, okay, Skin of Me is amazing, and also you're amazing, and your skin is looking better. Sometimes people will post a photograph and they'll think that their skin is just not improving, and they just need that nudge of reassurance from the community. So it's really heartwarming to know that, those people are out there sort of spreading the word and supporting people, and we've just had to facilitate it, but they do it. And the credit goes to them.
And you said you were in on that Facebook page this morning, just kind of observing us. So would you ever chip in and say, well, it's me?
No.
So you prefer to just kind of...
Yeah, I fly under the radar. It's a dermatologist-led brand, right? And so I've always felt that I don't have the medical credibility. And so I think that the brand just doesn't need me to be the face of it.
And you are quite low-key, aren't you?
In general, yeah. I mean, after the SVB fiasco, I've had a bit more media exposure than I'm used to.
Or are comfortable with?
You know what? I'm quite talkative, to be honest, and I always knew that I wanted to put my head up above the parapet at some point. And only a week ago, I did my first ever podcast. So it's quite ironic. There's just been a lot in this past week. But no, I actually have realized that I think I can be a pretty good evangelist for my companies. And I think that can really help spread the mission of your business. I think it can help you recruiting talent. And I think that it can just help be good PR. And also, I just enjoy conversations like this. It's fun.
Let's go back to the product again. What's your price point? I'm thinking it's expensive. Good skincare is expensive.
I remember the very first person that posted the first video that went up on Instagram from a customer in the spring, summer of 2020. And she did this video and she started unboxing the product saying, I just can't believe the price. And she was saying, it's too good to be true. And that, you know, that can go one of two ways. And in her case, she believed that it was all credible and legit. And she was blown away at you being able to get that much value for our price point. Let me talk you through that. What we always wanted to do from the get-go, remember the sample pots that I was talking about? The whole reason for the sample pots is to de-risk the first purchase for the customer. So you can try the product out before you're committing. At Skin and Me, we really wanted to have that de-risked first month, and we wanted to have a really strong offer. And so if you go to our Instagram and look on our bio, you'll get your first month at a heavy discount. And that's an offer incentive that has worked really well for us, because it means people can dip their toe in and experience the results and experience the service. And it's not just a one-week sample. This is a full month's supply that you get in your daily doser. And so for us, people can try it risk-free and, well, low risk, and then they pay £24.99 for the daily doser on a monthly basis.
Okay, and that price point will have been very specific. You decided that £24.99 was the point at which people could afford it, but make it achievable, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, when you're starting a business, you know, it's challenging to make the numbers work, and you've just got to find a price point that ticks all of the boxes. A price point that means you can pay back your marketing cost in the right amount of time. A price point that means it's still living to our mission of democratizing access to dermatology. And that's the sweet spot price point that we feel. I mean, I don't know, who knows? Maybe we could charge more. But we are at a price point and have signed up hundreds of thousands of customers such that we're confident in it. And the way to think about it is, we really preach this thing called skin minimalism. And there's been a trend in recent years, and you know, the Korean beauty trend came to the UK, seven-step regimes, and people would spend even more on their beauty products. With Skin and Me, we want you to clear out... Half the problem sometimes is just using so many different products, and it's hard to use process of elimination to know what's causing an issue on your skin. So with Skin and Me, all you need to use is a daily SPF, and we give recommendations on which to use, a cleanser, your Skin and Me treatment cream, and a moisturizer. And that's it. And so our job is to basically get you to pair things back. And so you should be spending less money.
You mentioned spring, summer 2020. And of course, the key was that was the pandemic. No one was going to the shops. Everyone was stuck at home, probably looking at their skin in the mirror. That must have been hugely helpful to your growing brand.
Yeah, we didn't have much of a pre-COVID baseline to compare to, but I know that if we did, it would have definitely propelled us in a way that would have been possible pre-COVID. In COVID, people started taking self-care more seriously, spending a lot more time online. And also, critically, the NHS was just in a really, really challenging spot. And we represented a solution for people that really needed treatment for their skin, and it meant that we could alleviate some stress from the NHS system as well. So it definitely, it was like beneficial. It just was. We didn't ask for it, but it meant that we got off to a flying start, frankly.
Now, as you know, Piper believes that there are these key inflection points in a business when things really need to step change. They call it 7-17-70. We're talking about, for example, you know, turnover or number of sites or number of people. What, when you look at Skin and Me, what were your inflection points?
I think about it in terms of team size. So when we had seven people, this is the beauty of a startup. You, in the very early days, when you're seven people or less, frankly, you can all work together through osmosis. You all stay tuned into each other because you're all in the same office and everyone knows everything and you don't need much structure. And you shouldn't have much structure, to be honest. When you get to 17, and in our case, it was quite unique because we had 17, more than 17 people at the time we launched. And so you do need more structure at that point, but it's still very early stage and people are doing more than their typical remit because there's just too much to do and not enough resource. That journey from 7 to 17 was basically us having the right team together. So myself and Phil, who I started the business with, and then the three co-founders that we'd recruited into the company, we went out and raised an £8 million funding round to set up the business for scale. And within that time period, we started recruiting some more people, but we didn't have much money in the company, so we were limited in how we could do that. But as soon as that money hit the bank, we recruited around 20 people, basically. So by the time we launched, we had the ability to start scaling the business from the get-go, which is a slightly atypical approach in a startup because you need the capital in the business to have the ability to do that, to build the factory here in Park Royal, to hire the team, to have, in some companies, it might be a luxury to have dedicated customer service early on. But in our case, we saw that as an essential because if we didn't have it, the business was going to be constrained and I and other people would have to start doing customer service, which would have slowed us down. So that got us to 17 plus people. And that's kind of my sweet spot. We then have been on, I guess, a journey for the past 2 years to get to where we're at now, nearly 100 people. And I think that the skill sets that you start needing are, you still need every individual to take initiative, basically. For me, that's the most important quality. It doesn't matter what role you are, what your experience is, you need to demonstrate that you take initiative. And we don't want to hire great people and tell them what to do. Frankly, you should be telling us what to do. But as the company grows and grows, 70 plus people, it does need more structure. It does need more formality. And you have to do things that you just don't do when you're young as a company. And someone has to be focused on HR and people. And as in someone dedicated focused on that, there has to be someone managing the office. In the early days, it's just me and everyone else chipping in for those responsibilities. So where we're at now is we're in the process of setting up the business for the next phase of growth. We raised £10 million just before Christmas. And so we're recruiting certain roles just to support that growth trajectory.
When you look back at the last 4 or 5 years, is there anything you wish that you had done earlier or invested in earlier?
We should have done influencer marketing earlier, I think. That was obvious in hindsight. We should have launched more products earlier on, I think. It's been such a learning that once someone trusts your brand, their propensity to then buy into more of the regime with you is so much higher. And so in our case, more than 50% of people have already taken up our moisturizer and cleanser because, Skin of Me, I know Skin of Me and I trust them and this just makes my life easier. And so had we known that many people would take it up, we would have done that sooner instead of some other stuff that we did.
What about hires? Senior leadership hires? What were your most important ones?
We took a pretty unique path at Skin and Me. Remember I said that we had this co-founding team in the early days? The caliber of those people was really high. And so this is actually a similar approach to what Intel took in the early days. They hired really senior experienced people early on because they knew that they had a really grand plan for the business. In our case, we hired three great co-founders, Rachel, Chief Customer Officer, so everything brand and digital, Mike, CTO from Facebook, data wizard, frankly, and just like really high quality technical person. And then Horatio, who is now CEO. We hired him as COO, just deeply operational and had been at a snack company called Graze.com and worked in engineering and setting up the factory there. So we already had a really solid foundation that we then just had to pad out over time. And honestly, I don't think there's any critical early hires in that leadership team that we were missing. And I think that the bet that we took by almost over-hiring early on, albeit not typical, I think really paid off.
I mean, clearly it worked brilliantly, but how on earth did you afford to pay all those really quite senior people when they came to you?
We didn't. We'd agreed not to pay ourselves.
At all?
At all, yeah, because the funding round had no certainty. And we thought, we'll just back pay ourselves a very measly salary, frankly, once the funding comes in. So the reason that the leadership team joined the business so early on, when it was, frankly, embryonic, was because of their belief in the potential, their belief in the fact that this idea that we have and the caliber of the people that we are assembling, if this idea is going to work, this is the team to do it. If not, then this idea can't work, frankly. Each of those individuals valued their equity in the business, the future value of that equity, to a point that outperformed their current earning potential, basically. And that's the key. But the beauty of Skin and Me is, yes, we can create a lot of value because it's a really compelling business model, which is defensible. So your equity will be worth a lot more in the future, was the pitch. But also, we're doing something really impactful. So that was a really powerful combination. And it is a domino effect. Once you convince one or two credible people, that means it's then not just me and Phil in a dingy room trying to convince someone. It's four people, it's five people, and it gets that bit easier.
And what's your culture within Skin and Me?
We really value the customer. And I always think that when you start a business, you should listen to two things, the customer and your instincts, and ignore everything else. Embrace the unknown is another one of our values there, because it's really important that people just have the courage to take on new challenges. You know, it's not like being in a big established company. We're still figuring stuff out as we go, like any startup is. And the third one is challenge and be challenged, which was something that I was really keen to embed in the early days of the business, which basically just means that you need to be prepared. It's a high challenge environment, and the best ideas win no matter who they're from. And that's the only way, in my view, to build a business. I always encourage even the most junior person in the company to challenge me, because I as the CEO, like, set the precedent. And so we have an environment where whatever your idea is, you need to be prepared to defend it. And you need to be able to demonstrate that the basis of your idea or your proposal is really logical and holds up. And if you can convince people, that's the idea that we go with. I think that having secrets and being overly hierarchical just works against you, frankly, even though it can be a bit uncomfortable for people that aren't used to that culture at first. I think once you're conditioned to it, you wouldn't have it any other way.
So what are your ambitions going forward? I know you've stepped back. You're now in a chairman capacity, aren't you? But what is the ambition for taking the brand international, for example?
We feel like we're only just scratching the surface in the UK. So we're not international yet. We may be at some point in the future. I remember always pitching to investors that we were going to go international. I think in the first year was the plan. And I think we had even proposed some countries. In hindsight, it's really hard to do that. And it's just a lot of complexity. And I think it would have taken our eye off the ball in our core market, which is the UK. So watch this space. But it's not going to happen, like, immediately.
I want to talk to you about sustainability. It's really important to Piper, which is a B Corp. How important is sustainability to you at Skin and Me? Because, as we've already discussed, skincare is just packaging, isn't it?
I mentioned our Daily Doser, which is our custom designed and manufactured dispensing bottle, basically, for your cream. The reason that we wanted to design the Daily Doser packaging was so that people knew that they were getting the recommended dosage every day. And there was nothing on the market that we could find. And the whole category is basically all, frankly, single-use plastic dispensers, and you just squeeze something out and you kind of hope for the best. And so we wanted the Daily Doser to be primarily made of aluminium so that it was a more sustainable packaging option. And then we put the Daily Doser into this little box, this beautiful little yellow parcel that arrives in your letterbox. And we designed that to be as minimalist as possible. So it's FSC board and it's very light. There's not much to it. And so all of the decisions that we make, we're always considering, like, how can we do this in the most sustainable way? The only thing to point out is customers aren't coming to Skin and Me primarily for sustainability. So the whole thing being refill and reuse would be a nice bonus, but it's the most important thing is that they can get really effective results. And then we layer in sustainability in the decisions that we make around packaging and boxes and so on.
So how important is sustainability to you then?
Really, really important. I've always been fascinated by the consumer goods category. So personal care, home cleaning, all the products that Procter & Gamble and Unilever make. So almost all of these products, I mean, they are improving to a degree, but they're largely made out of synthetic ingredients and are in plastic packaging. And I've always thought it doesn't need to be that way. And so my new business, Life Supplies, it's built around sustainability. That is the foundation of it. And what we do is we have manufactured lifetime packaging. So you get, say, a deodorant bottle once or a hand wash bottle once, and you never buy it again. And you get that and you refill it forever. And we send you sustainable refills in the post every few months. And so it's really trying to get people out of this, you know, buy, dispose, repeat, and into buy once and refill forever. And, you know, if you look at the top 10 plastic waste contributors in the world, the big consumer goods giants are always in that. And so for me personally, I care a lot about it, and I'm really excited to hopefully make a dent in what is currently a really polluting category.
So you're off to the next thing now.
Yeah.
Do you get bored? What is it?
No, I don't get bored. No, this weekend meant that I definitely didn't get bored.
But you're not, I mean, you're not sitting back and enjoying the success of Skin and Me. You're off and running and you've got a new venture. And
yeah, I don't think I'll ever do that. I think I'll do this until the day I die. I think that, I mean, this is to my detriment. You know, it's funny, if people ask me for business advice, I always try to support entrepreneurs. If they ask me for personal advice, I'm like, I'm not your guru. Honestly, I need to do a lot more work on myself, I'm sure. And my work-life balance is really bad, frankly. But I think that what's important is just doing what feels natural to you. And my work doesn't feel like work. And on a Saturday morning, I just want to fire up my laptop and get things done that I didn't get the time to do during the week. And it doesn't feel like I'm punishing myself. I'm just so excited to make more stuff and put it out into the world. It's really, really exciting making products. And it's really exciting to know, like with Life Supplies as a new company, we've only just launched. I haven't yet seen any in the wild. I haven't seen someone get it out when I'm on the tube or something like that. And I'm really excited for the first day that happens. And so for me, the excitement is growing. It's not dwindling.
And how do you relax then? You've got your one poker game a week, which doesn't sound that relaxing, I've got to say. Look, if I was your mother, I'd be worried sick. James, I would be worried sick.
I'm not going to lie. My parents, I always remember, because I was living at home after university whilst I was playing poker professionally. I'm not going to lie, they're a bit underwhelmed, that being my starting career choice. And I said, okay, I decided I'm going to do something a bit more responsible. I'm going to start a business. And I think that at least now they believe that it's going to keep me going.
But they've created this alien. You talk about your parents, you know, your father's a doctor, your brother's a doctor. Where did this alien James spring from? It must be deeply unfamiliar to them.
Yeah, I think it is to most people. I spend so much time with other founders that I sometimes have to get reminded, you know, if I'll meet someone, I'm like, oh yeah, some people do just, they work a 9-to-5 and they forget about work the second they walk out the door, and they are very content and they never want that to change. And in some ways, being a founder is a curse because, you know, you ask me how I relax, I'm going to have to rack my brain thinking how I do relax.
I don't because, think you do. I'm guessing you don't.
I just think that I've found what makes me tick and I love doing it, and I keep enjoying leveling up, and I just want to do more and more, and I never want to look back and think, maybe I could have gone higher, maybe I could have had more of an impact, maybe I could have created a bigger brand, maybe I could have, I should have made that bet that I didn't make. And so I'm just trying to avoid those regrets. There's this video I remember watching when I was younger called the Regret Minimization Framework by Jeff Bezos, the Amazon founder. And it's a very simple concept. He was trying to decide if he should start Amazon or not because he was in a very well-paid Wall Street job. And he said he just projected himself forward to when he was in his rocking chair thinking, well, would I regret being 30 years old, leaving my job to start this bookstore idea, even if it didn't work out. And he thought, no, I won't, because I know that I could go and get a job on Wall Street anyway. So the decision was made. And for me, it's similar in that I've just got a really, really big vision for the stuff that I want to achieve. And so I want to make sure that I maximize my potential. Entrepreneurship is, you've got to do all the right stuff, but luck plays a huge part in it. You've got to do the right stuff at the right time. I mean, how on earth did we figure out the Skin and Me business model at the right time and then find the right angel investor that led to us raising the money and all of this stuff? You've just got to be in the game to take advantage of the luck. But a lot of it's kind of out of my hands from here, as long as I keep at it.
James Mushricki, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.